All right, guys, welcome back to another episode of Persuasion by the Pint. Jonathan Taylor, along with
Sean McCool.
No guest today, but nope. That's not going to keep us from being a little controversial, maybe throwing in some of this, some of that.
Yeah.
A whole flight, as we say.
Yeah, we like to call this a flight of persuasion. So three, four, five things, different topics, tastes, genres, all thrown in the mix. See which one you like best.
That's right. So this one is entitled Hypnosis, Persuasion, and Politics. So we'll be delving in. Something happened this week. I can't quite remember.
Yeah, there's something going on.
Something happened today, unfortunately.
I saw a Facebook post and I was like, oh, what happened? Because I just haven't been watching the news. So.
Right.
We'll jump in with all kinds of goodies. I've got a little mini smorgasbord of books here that we can jump into that we'll just kind of randomly pull a couple ideas from, plus a couple articles online. And then the big thing that happened this week, well, depends on if you're interested or not, I guess, whether it's big. But before we do that,
we've got something to attend to.
I've got an empty glass.
Uh-oh.
Which that's never doesn't good. Seem right, considering we're talking about persuasion by the pint. So.
Uh-oh.
So let's fill these things up.
Oh, I thought you were going to tell me you don't even have one today. I was like, no. I was about to freak out. Like, what?
No, I got one.
Are we going through another fast or what? What's going on?
No, it's actually the final beer from this month's box from the original Craft Beer Club.
Oh, okay. All right. So.
That's your cue to talk about.
Oh, it is my cue. Okay. Let me bring up our
that was my settle little segue.
Our crass commercial. Okay. Yeah. Here we go. So this episode is brought to you as Sean tried to nudge me along there, but it's brought to you.
Fumbled the handoff, man.
Totally fumbled. Right there at the goal line. Craft Beer Club. Yes, our friends at Craft Beer Club. You can find them over at persuasionbythepint.com/craftbeer. These guys are outstanding, provide outstanding craft beers from the finest independent microbreweries across the U.S. You know craft beers have exploded in popularity over the past decade. And one of the best ways to sample so many of these new and unique beers is by letting our friends over at the original Craft Beer Club do all the legwork and all the tasting. And Sean's going to help out with a little bit of that tasting. They bring you the best beer discoveries in the country. So if you want to learn more, again, persuasionbythepint.com/craft beer. And they take away the worry and wasted expense by delving wide and deep into thousands of beers. So you don't have to do like we do and sample all of these beers and give you good or bad ratings every week.
Although I got to admit, it's not a bad job.
No, I mean, no, I like it.
Not a bad thing. But yeah, it's kind of cool because these are some things that being in Texas, like I could never get what they sent because they're a lot of times they're local.
Sure.
So like this, you know, this month's beer came, we had a couple of different ones, had them up in Wisconsin, I think. And then this last group has been from Virginia. Mm-hmm. This one today is from Aleworks Brewing Company in Williamsburg, Virginia. And it is a Chesapeake Pale Ale. I got to be honest. I read the description a little bit earlier. I'm a little nervous. Uh-oh. We'll see.
Yeah.
Have not tried this one yet.
Chesapeake Pale Ale.
So what's cool is they give you like a little fact sheet with every beer, which is kind of nice. It's even got like a recipe on the back too. So you get two of these each box case full of beer. And you get four types of beer. You get three each of four types of beer.
Oh, wow.
Each month. So, all right. So this, then we got some trivia too, but I'll read about the Chesapeake Pale Ale. It's an American Pale Ale, 5.6% ABV. The Chesapeake Pale Ale features a bright floral and citrus aroma and flavor thanks to Cascade, Chinook, Amarillo, and Centennial hops. Very specific there. Used with a heavy hand in both the brewing and dry hopping process, there's a great balance achieved from start to finish with plenty of great hop character and a refreshing mouthfeel. This is a solid American-style Pale Ale and one of the favorites in the Aleworks lineup. Cheers.
Cheers. Wow.
So a little early for cheers, but all right. That looks good. You got over there in Knoxville?
Well, I have, I'm trying. Yeah, Louisville,
wherever you're at.
So I've got we call it Louisville.
Yeah.
Because we, especially right now, we don't want to be associated with Louisville.
Yeah.
Let's see. So I'm pulling up the info on this one.
This one's a little heady.
Oh, yeah.
Check that out. That's a...
Wow.
It's a little foamy.
Little foamy for a...
for pale ale, yeah.
All right,
definitely so... Got that cloudy look to it. Looks like an IPA to me. But it's a it's a CPA, not an IPA. So what you got?
Well, I can't find any information, but this is from Tailgate. It is a Pastry Shack Imperial Stout. So I was trying to get the specs on it, but
as soon as you said pastry, I was like, oh, that's got to be a porter or stout or something rich.
Oh yeah. So I pulled this baby out from the cooler. It's just this week at my local spot that I swing by, and they this is brand new.
I bet they love you there, huh?
They do love me there. I'm like a regular. If I'm not I make a stop once a week for our beer, you know, for the show. Yeah. And you know, and then that's where we buy our wine. You know, because we like we enjoy some wine during the week, so we'll make a stop in. And I mean, there's so many wines. Yeah. But we like the bourbon barrel.
Yes.
You
know,
so.
Yeah, those are good. I like those.
All right. So this is unfortunately I don't have much to say, but this is I know it's going to be thick. Again, Imperial. It's a pastry. Shack Imperial Stout from our friends of Tailgate, which we've had on before. And let's see. Pretty nice. Pretty thick, dark.
Looks like an Imperial Stout.
I wish I could find the...
nothing's on the can? No copy on the can or nothing?
No copy. I mean, this label. Wow. It's a pretty cool label. It's got... I can read this, the fact that it has coffee. It's got coconut... marshmallow, chocolate, and vanilla.
Wow.
That's the first marshmallow I've seen. I think that's the first marshmallow I've ever had on that's a stout.
Cool. Yeah, marshmallow. That'll be interesting.
Yes, indeed.
Just don't think about the Stay Puft marshmallow.
Just don't think it. Don't think it. By the way, isn't there a new Ghostbusters supposed to be? Aren't they redoing that whole thing again?
Is anything on schedule right now? Like nothing is on schedule right now.
Everything's 21 or 22 now. So forget the rest is here. There's no movies.
Yeah. I mean,
watching Netflix and reruns the rest of the year.
All right. So should we, take a sip?
Toast.
Toast. Cheers.
That was like a double tap.
Yeah, got that floral going on. That hops, not my favorite.
Not your favorite, huh?
Nope.
That's really too bad, man.
Last week's brown ale was really good. Mm-hmm. I like that. Some of the other brown ales. I'm just not a pale ale guy. It's just, you know, so this is my season right now. So this is a little, it's overwhelming to me, all the pale ales.
Right. Yeah, I just, if you could only segment your, you know, that's the thing. If you could segment out what you don't want, so you only get what you want.
Yeah.
That might be a nice feature.
I do like a black, like an India pale ale that's black. Mm-hmm. I've had a couple of those. Those are pretty good.
Yeah.
Which kind of swings back more like a porter or a stout. So I was going to make something special today. I may save it for next week, but I was going to do, no offense to the... So I was told if you order this in a bar, mm-hmm. what I'm about to say, you should never order it in the term I'm about to say, because it could be offensive, but it's called the Irish car bomb.
Oh yeah. I've had those.
Okay. So I actually have all the stuff to make it. I was going to make it. And I was like, maybe I'll do it next
week. Is that what Is that what the Jägermeister?
No, it's a Guinness.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Guinness.
And then in a shot glass, you put like Bailey's Irish cream.
Okay.
And then like an Irish whiskey.
That's right.
On top of that. So then you drop it all in the Guinness
that
and
sounds good.
Drink away.
Yep.
So we maybe we could try that next week. Make sure you have your supplies. We could do it together.
All right. An Irish car right. bomb.
Yeah. I think it's also called a depth charge or something else, but mm-hmm. If you order it, because Irish car bomb could be offensive, especially if you're over in Ireland. Just yes. for those listening. All right. All right. Well, so we've got some stuff to talk about.
Well, I get you. We haven't rated them yet.
Oh, yeah. Man, I'm just so eager to talk about this stuff.
All right. So you got to give me, I know it's not, not your favorite. But what are you going to mercifully give this beer?
Yeah, like I think the quality is probably good. I mean, I've tasted the one thing is I'm kind of learning the different IPAs, so that's kind of good. But I have to say, like, I'm not a fan, so I'm trying to keep the category. So I'm going to give it like a 2.5.
Okay.
Because I think for the category, it seems like a pretty good taste.
Okay. That's
but
fair.
I'm just not a fan. So since it's my rating,
sure.
If I was in a judging competition, I'd have to judge it differently. But
right.
I'm not that talented to judge, like actually judge beer.
All right, 2.5 it is. I'm giving mine a 4.8. This is fantastic.
So, oh wow!
I can't say anything else.
I've had a couple pastry stouts and pastry. Imperial stouts. Is that Imperial stout or Imperial porter?
Imperial stout.
Yeah.
So this one, so I finally found their, I just went to Tailgate cause I couldn't Google this and find it anywhere. So I don't know if this is brand new, but this is a, apparently, so I found out why, cause it says on their website, this is a small batch experimental line. So they have from pastry stouts to fruited kettle sours. That sounds awful. They have milkshake IPAs to fruited cream ales. We have a lot of fun with this series. So this is one of their experimental, experimental.
I could go for a milkshake. that sounds pretty good.
So, and by the way, this is not a, this is not a pastry shack. It's a pastry snack. S-H-N-A-C-K. Schnack.
I guess that's some German reference. Or something.
Yeah. All right. Pretty good. I like it. 4.8.
That's strong.
Good job, Tailgate. Keep them coming. All right.
I may have to go hunt that down and see if it's around here.
It's worth it, man.
So that's good. Local though, isn't it?
Yeah. This is, these guys are in Nash Vegas.
Yeah.
They're okay. Nashville. Yeah. So,
all right.
But, So, I guess we got to get in the good stuff now.
Yeah, so you sent me a link to an article earlier this week. You said, "Ooh, we should talk about this on the show." And I read it. And I'm like, "That's interesting."
Yeah.
and I can't tell if the author's a fan or not a fan. It's kind of hard.
I would say no.
Yeah, just I'm guessing no.
Yeah.
But pretty balanced. I think overall, I think it was a pretty good article. But we're going to be diving in this week. So this week we had the debates, presidential debates, as we're recording this, which was, I had some friends over, sure. My previous team that I was on, capitalism.com, some of them came over and we kind of watched together and unanimously, we all thought it was pretty terrible.
Yeah.
Like it was just a train wreck.
It's cringy.
Yeah.
Cringy.
Like I literally felt like, I really don't want to vote for either of these guys right now in the moment.
Yeah.
Like I don't think it helped either one, and I'm sure it hurt both a little bit.
Yeah, I think so. I don't think you came away. Most people didn't come away from that debate feeling that, either candidate is like, wow, they said nothing. In fact. Probably hurt themselves. Yeah. So I would say it's probably a tie with, quite frankly, if I were being completely honest, of the two, maybe Trump looking a little weaker, for his attacks, but
a little more
that's defensive. His style. Yeah.
Yeah, he felt a little more defensive and, and on defense than Biden did. So yeah, it was an interesting debate, and it was pretty funny because, like, you know, the commentators even afterwards, we watched it on CNN because we wanted to see if there was anything there, and then we kind of flipped back and forth on the commentary afterwards to Fox and CNN to see the difference, and both of them were like, "This was awful." Like, even Karl Rove, he was like, "This is pretty bad."
Yeah,
this was not good. I'm not sure either one lost their base or anything like that, you know. But if anything, independents are probably just like, "I'm out." You know, like I don't.
I think I'll stay home.
Yeah, I just don't know if an independent, if it could have just killed a lot of the swing votes, is what it could have, like, just from voting at all.
Yeah.
So
which I think is beneficial to the incumbent, because typically swing votes are usually, you know, people that are independent generally outnumber, generally speaking, swing towards the incumbent, at the end. So it may turn out to benefit him more in the long run, but still, think most people is like, you know, holding their nose, more than likely at the polls. But I did want to mention, from a visual, you know, you talk about visual persuasion. Mm-hmm. So I had my kids, you know, we actually watched it out here in the office, and I brought both my boys. My wife came out here. So I was like, you know, we're going to do some civics, you know, some civics lesson. Although I thought it was going to be a civics lesson, not a circus. But I said, you know, about 30 minutes into this, I said, I'm going to do something interesting. I'm going to click the mute button, which I did. And I'm going to say, okay, so
can I just say, that's a really good choice?
Yeah.
30 minutes in. I wish I had thought of that. That would have been a good experiment.
So I said, let's try something. Let's look at it from a visual without all the words and the talking over each other. I said, from a visual standpoint, who looks the stronger and the weaker candidate, you know? And I think we were all unanimous to say that, you know, the one candidate that looked the weakest was Biden, because he just looks pale and he looks frail. So
he looked
physically frail. Yeah.
Now, I will say one thing I thought he did really well, and he was obviously coached on this, is kind of when things got tough or they started sliding, he would look directly at the camera and start talking directly to the American people.
Right.
Which I thought was a good move.
Right. Yeah.
Trump didn't do that
once. He was always looking that way,
and the moderator or towards Biden or whatever. But, I thought that was a good, especially the way the camera angles were, at least the channel we were watching, like Biden looked directly at the people and talked directly to the people. And I think had he done that more and answered more questions, it would have been even stronger. Mm-hmm. But neither one of them answered the questions and talked to the American people. I didn't think, other than those brief moments where Biden did it, because I think that was what he was coached to do when things started getting out of hand.
Right.
Which I think is a good move. Like, because when anytime you can make eye contact with people, we talk about persuasion and body language, like you're talking about. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely the eye contact with the camera, like it makes a difference.
Right.
So, but yeah, I think just from a, like, physically without the voice or anything like this, I mean, Trump looks younger and looks stronger.
Yeah.
You know, Biden has a better haircut, but.
Well, so let's mention, so the article we're going to touch on real quick, and we're going to spend a ton of time on this because we got a number of things to talk about. But if you get a chance, and we'll post it in our show notes, but it is it's over at Fortune. You can find it in the title. The article is by Ralph Benko, and the article is entitled Donald Trump is a Master of Hypnotism, How He Uses the Power on America and Then on Himself. It's a cool title.
Yeah, that was a nice little unexpected twist at the end there. <That's>
on himself, headline. Yeah. So I'm gonna hit on some, like, just some points in this article. It said the author says in it, Trump is indeed a powerful hypnotist with the ability to conjoin belief and imagination. He is so powerful that he may even have hypnotized the great Scott Adams, who actually wrote a book. We've mentioned Scott Adams' book, Win Bigly, a number of times. A fabulous book on persuasion. Mm-hmm. But he says he may have hypnotized the great Scott Adams into overlooking a key counterpoint. Trump, while hypnotizing the world, has also repeatedly hypnotized himself, sometimes to his great detriment. And I think that we may have seen some of that self-hypnosis, you know, in action on the stage Tuesday night.
I think you're right. And I think that's a good match for this article. I agree. Like it, and he does have that history, right? And that's what a lot of people who don't like him talk about. Like he's arrogant, and that it says in the article, that's kind of where you end up.
Right.
You start believing your own press or the press that you create for yourself. Like, you know, at some point you can get to the point where you slip over into arrogance, and then, right, as we know, pride comes before the fall, right? So is that now, or is that, you know, later? Like, is it going to affect the election?
Right.
Or is it going to happen, you know, sometime after that, and then it doesn't really matter from a political standpoint anymore?
Well, here's the flip side to that is that everybody knows, people that know Donald Trump, even before he was in politics, know that, you know, this is part of his personality. And so, you know, in the article, you know, it references Al Rice and Jack Trout, who we talked about recently, because you brought up one of their old books, The 22 Immutable Laws of Marketing. And he says, you know, that was written back in 93, where they say at first Donald was successful. Then he branched out, put his name on everything the banks would lend him money for. So, I mean, he just went out to everything. And what made him successful, though, in the short term is exactly what caused him to fail in the long term. One of the chapters in that is entitled Success Often Leads to Arrogance and Then to Failure. And they say that's a, you know, deaf paraphrase of an old Greek mythic principle, ablos, which leads to hubris, pride, and inevitably followed by the goddess Nemesis, retribution. So, you know, it seems like an over, you know, that's a cycle that he tends to go through. A huge part of his, a part of his career, his life. I mean, you look at his, becoming not only, you know, he was a real estate tycoon, but then he got into TV, you know, The Apprentice. Branched out, put his name on everything. If you get a chance to watch, there's a series on Netflix that talks about him, you know, that gives his story. So he literally took the name Trump and marketed that and created basically a private business off the name Trump, you know. You know, and that became a business in and of itself, the business of Trump, the brand Trump.
He got into the education thing, which fell apart. Yep. And he's had a lot of, you know, several bankruptcies.
Sure.
I mean, and even on the personal side, right? I mean, several marriages.
Right. Yeah.
So you definitely see this pattern in his life. Yep. So, yeah. The question is, does it hurt him in the next 30 days, 45 days? I guess we are down to 30 days now, aren't we? Yeah. 31 days. So that'll be interesting to see. I think it's a good observation by the guy who wrote this article.
I do too.
And you don't really think of, I guess, you know, if you spend enough time, you think about these candidates. I mean, the election cycle now is so long, you know, 18 months to 2 years almost now. Like, as soon as the midterms are over, like, you know, the primary start and all this other stuff. And you're going out and you're saying the same message over and over and over and over and over and over and over. And then when you get toward, you know, within 6 to 4 months, I mean, literally 2 to 3 speeches a day, your stump speeches, you're talking about how great you are, how great your administration are. Like, it's no doubt you're going to kind of brainwash and hypnotize yourself and everyone around you and all your fans.
Yeah.
And you're, you know, it's just going to happen.
Yeah.
So it is tough, I think, to, and that can happen with, you know, companies, that happens with brands, sure. that happens with, you know, anybody, any of us. Mm-hmm. Like, I think it can happen if you're constantly parading that out. So,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's that, there's a downfall to that. And mm-hmm. who knows how this will play out. You know, I think we both have our own opinions as to, how it'll play out here in the next 30 days. But you know, that's the, you know, there's always a downside to that. They referenced Napoleon in the article. You know, Napoleon is very much good, like, right?
Never good when you're compared to Napoleon.
Yeah, who had a lot of the same characteristics, you know, which, you know, are attractive to a degree, you know,
right.
You know, you talk about persuasion, people that are always positive. You know, I think, you know, one of the things that you know about Trump is growing up, he was big on the power of positive thinking. You know, studied that, studied, you know, Napoleon Hill, Dale Carnegie, all of these greats in that realm. And so he's overly optimistic about things. You know, if you hear him talk, especially if you watch this Netflix series, optimism, this is going to turn out great. You know, we're going to see incredible growth. We're going to see a cure for Corona here shortly. COVID, whatever, you know, he's always overly optimistic and he overpromises. But I think given the option of that and a negative point of view, I think most people feel comfortable with a more optimistic point of view, regardless of whether it's actually true or not. They like people who are optimistic. That's an attractive and persuasive feature. So that's part of his persuasion, and influence there.
Well, you know, since we're doing a flight of persuasion,
all right.
My wife called, she's out on the girls weekend this weekend. And, they were talking about Enneagrams. Are you familiar with Enneagrams?
Oh yeah. Very familiar. Right?
So they were all talking about that stuff and kind of doing their thing. And one of the comments that came up was, you know, what would Trump's Enneagram be? Mm-hmm. And he's an 8 apparently. So if you don't know what Enneagrams are, it's Enneagram for those listening.
Yep.
Hopefully you caught that. Tons of stuff on it. If you even get the spelling close, it'll pop up on Google. You can do Enneagram types. So type 8 is the challenger.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And every Enneagram has a positive side and a negative side.
Absolutely.
Like, you know, one where they're going, when they're at their best, they show up this way. And when they're not at their best, they tend to devolve into the other side of the same thing. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was interesting when she said that. I knew we were talking about this today, but so like, for instance, it says people of this personality type are essentially unwilling to be controlled either by others or by their circumstances. They fully intend to be masters of their fate, strong-willed, decisive, practical, tough-minded, energetic. Yep. Yep. I think all those describe him. They also, and then it's also, they tend to be domineering. Their unwillingness to be controlled by others frequently manifests in the need to control others instead. When healthy, this tendency is kept under check, but the tendency is always there. Nevertheless, it can assume a central role in 8's interpersonal relationships. So if you kind of, and then it kind of branches that out, and it can definitely go, you know, it talks about the, like the big fears and the concerns of 8's, like, you know, they need to be in control. And when they start to lose that control, instead of calming down, they get more agitated.
Yes.
And I think you saw that on Tuesday
night.
Like he got more agitated because he wasn't in control.
My youngest son's an 8, and that explains. I mean, because he was eating that up the whole time, like putting him in his place, blah blah blah, talking, you know, basically commanding. And my son is an 8. He's very much, you know, he's not a big guy for his age, but mm-hmm. he towers from his personality. He towers over people, and he will command people that are, you know, bigger than him and tell them what to do, which is, I find is amazing. But that's just his personality because he's very strong willed and very, it's an attractive quality to people that maybe, you know, have a different personality and are easily led. So he can easily lead people. And so, he was eating that up the whole time. So that sounds, 8 sounds spot on. I will say too, and that matches one thing that I caught really that I took away from that, where they try to get him to denounce the racist or these groups like the Proud Boys or whatever. And you know that a person that's an eight personality, and especially one that's a master negotiator that does a lot of negotiation. So, you know, in persuasion, when you try to force people to do something, sometimes you ask for something small, you know, so you know, Sean, I'm going to ask you a question. If I want to lead you somewhere, I'm going to start with this kind of an incremental. So I think he's pretty aware of that. And so when they ask him to denounce, you know, this group, once you subject yourself to that and agreeing with them, then mm-hmm. you open yourself up to other things. So people can
it's that loss of control, right?
That's right. So, and he doesn't want to lose that. So that matches really well. So he's on the defense against that. And I think as a negotiator, plus being an eight, he's fully aware and the antennas are pretty much, you know, on alert when something like that happens, because in negotiation, as you know, Sean, whenever you negotiate, you're always, the first thing in persuasion is that you never come with what you want. Ultimately, you always start with something small. You never, like, if I'm trying to negotiate and I see, you know, whenever I'm out there in the sales world and I'm trying to negotiate a $1 million deal out there with a company, I don't come in with like the product itself. You know, I come in with like just this, you know, I request a small favor or a small thing. You know, could you try this little, maybe an ancillary product over here, or, you know, ask for something really minute, get them to say yes on that. And I've done that many times and it works. But the last thing you want to do is ask for something major. But he's fully aware of that. I mean, his defenses are up. Even when you ask for something as minimal as just, all you got to do is denounce this group over here.
So here's what's interesting. I'm looking at the Enneagram Institute's website on Type 8, and they have like who are, you know, some of the famous Type 8s, and Donald Trump's on the list.
Steve Jobs.
But also on the list is Saddam Hussein. So people that don't like Donald Trump will love that comparison. But at the same time on the list is Martin Luther King Jr.
Mm-hmm.
I can see that. So it really depends on where you are, kind of on the positive, negative side of your type, you know, that's going to kind of see how that shows up.
Tell me, Steve Jobs has got to be on that list.
I don't see him. Winston Churchill.
That's interesting.
I don't know which Sean Connery. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have guessed that.
Yeah,
Dr. Phil is that makes sense.
Yeah,
yeah.
I wouldn't have thought Martin. You said Martin Luther King, Jr.
Yeah.
And I would have. I said yeah, but I really that's actually the whole time I was thinking, wow.
Well, because here's why. Like, so they have these eight levels of development. And by the way, from a persuasion standpoint, for those who are listening who think we might be going off the rails a little bit here, like if you understand this stuff and you can figure out who you're like negotiating with, or even like your avatar, if you were writing sales copy or something like that, if you know kind of your avatar is a certain way, there's tools that help you communicate with that person. Oh, yeah. And as a writer, as a presenter, as a salesperson, you're going to bring your own type into the equation. And if you're not aware, then what happens to you is just what happens to Donald Trump, right? He hypnotizes himself. He doesn't really think about what's going on. But they have these eight levels of development, and there's, you know, goes from level one, which is the healthiest, all the way to level nine, which is like the most unhealthy, right? So just while we're talking about this type eight, you know, level one at their very best, they become self-restrained and magnanimous, merciful and forbearing, masterful, mastering self through their self-surrender to higher authority, courageous, willing to put self in serious jeopardy to achieve their vision and have lasting influence, may achieve true heroism and historical greatness. So Martin Luther King, I think, is, you know, kind of fulfills that higher end. On the completely opposite, which is probably like, I don't know if Napoleon was on the list or not. I don't remember what Napoleon was, but you think about you know, Hemingway was pretty tortured soul, mm-hmm. and some of these others that are on this list, Mikhail Gorbachev, you know, on the far end, it's if they get in danger, they may brutally destroy everything that is not conformed to their will, rather than surrender to anyone else. Vengeful, barbaric, murderous, sociopathic tendencies generally corresponds antisocial personality disorder. Those are the two like extremes, and there's a whole lot of room in the middle. You know, I would say probably, Trump's probably level four, mm-hmm. honestly, unless he's, you know, if he's, I think if he's in the right group where he's not being challenged too much, he rises up.
Yeah.
But as soon as he gets kind of antagonistic with people, it devolves down real quick. Like when he's at his rallies, he's up there in the top, right?
Yeah.
Cause he's with his people.
Sure.
There's not a lot of pushback.
Yeah, he feeds on the energy. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, that's interesting. We could spend a whole lot of time on Enneagrams. We probably should have someone in the Enneagram
world
field, to join us soon. Because my wife, she got us into that. She studied it a whole lot, and she's got me identified as a three. Okay. My oldest son is a nine. My youngest son is an eight. And she's she's a one. So,
yeah, I'm a five.
You're a five? Yeah.
Yeah. So,
yeah. Very interesting.
So yeah, it's fascinating stuff. Well, we could go on, but I know you got a family date. So, I don't know. You want to hit one more thing or you want to call this a
episode? Do you have something? No, I've got a few more minutes if you got. Okay.
So I've got a couple. I thought we'd do like a little almost like mm-hmm. totally random thing. And we could just kind of randomly pick something from one of these. So first of all, I got three books.
Okay.
Here's the three books. I'm not going to show you the spines. All right. So one is on the top. Mm-hmm. Two will be in the middle. Three is on the bottom.
Okay.
So let's have a little fun. It's like a magic trick almost, right?
Okay.
So you pick one, two, or three. One's on top. Three's on the bottom.
I'm going to go with the middle. It's the thinnest one. So I'm curious about that one.
All right.
Plus so, hardy.
So this is TJ Rodletter. I can't remember. I never know how to spell his name. So this book is from like 2005 and I saw it on the shelf the other day when I was looking for something else mm-hmm. and I have not opened it in probably 10 years. But it's called 1,219 Powerful Marketing Ideas You Can Use to Get Rich.
Yep.
And it's from 10 years of being in the marketing business from TJ. And like I said, it was published in 2005. So this was like, again, pre-social media. All three of these books are very much pre-social media.
Right.
You missed out on Tested Sentences to Sell.
Oh, so you know. Man. But you know what? Here's a persuasion that people... here's a little takeaway. So you presented me three options. Mm-hmm. Most people, if you do that, most people are going to gravitate towards the middle, right?
Yep.
Nine times out of 10 or eight times out of 10. They go with the middle option.
When I used to sell insurance, I would always I'd build my presentation around the one I wanted to sell.
Yep.
At the price point I wanted to sell. And then I would come up with a higher option and a lower option. But I knew pretty soon in the presentation, you kind of feel out where they are.
Sure.
And you're like, okay, that's going to be my middle option. I draw it on the legal pad.
Yep.
And I'm like, now if that's not quite right, we've also got this option over here and it's always a step down and people never want to take a step down.
No.
However, if you want to, I know how some people are, you know, they like the Cadillacs and the Lexus and, you know, Rolls Royce. And we've got that over here for you as well. Here's what that looks like.
Right.
So of these three options, Mr. Smith, which one makes the most sense to you?
That's right.
Take the one in the middle.
Because
nobody wants to be, you know, most people don't want to be seen as excessive.
Yeah.
But you always have to give the high option.
Yeah.
Because there are those people out there that always take the high option.
Oh yeah.
My dad is one of those guys. Like he'll buy the most expensive tool to do a project, mm-hmm. even if he's only going to do the project one time.
Sure.
Like, you know, he'll, you know, get the best skill saw that you can find. Right. Yep. And pay triple for it when he really only needed like the, you know, the Ryobi. So he gets the, you know, the top of the line Makita when he could have got the Ryobi or whatever.
So I was so close to doing that in Lowe's a couple of weeks ago when I was putting up this board in my office. So I needed a handsaw, you know, just a circular handsaw. Yep. And I go to Lowe's and I'm looking at all the options and I'm looking at the high end, which is like these rechargeable, you know, you don't need a cord, man. These are rechargeable and they're like $250. I'm like, you know, I really like that, but it's like, but I gravitated down to the one step down, you know, went to the middle.
Yeah, well, that's probably, you're probably more practical and all that kind of
stuff. So. I'm like, how many times, you know, because I said that, I asked myself, how many times am I going to use this over my lifetime? Probably once or twice a year. So,
yeah, at most, All right, so I'm going to start flipping pages. You tell me when to stop. Okay.
All right, now.
Okay. Left side or right side?
Right.
Right side. All right, top third, middle third, or bottom third, and then I'll pick one.
Let's go top. I like being on the top. Top.
All right.
Top third.
So top it is. All right, so here's the one of the 1,219 powerful market entities you can use to get rich from Mr. TJ.
Look at that.
All right, so top of the list is Marketing Secret from Robert Collier.
Mm. Oh, from the Robert Collier letter book.
Right.
I like it.
So. Here's the, so we'll see if we agree or disagree with this in today's current world, right?
Okay.
Showmanship sells. Put yourself out there. Don't be afraid to stand out.
Every time it
every
works.
Every single time. Yep. Yeah. So
absolutely. Look at our president.
look at the president. He's batting 4 years plus TV shows and buildings with his names on them. Exactly. Golf courses, free golf wherever he goes in the world, pretty much. Yeah, so that's I've actually got, I ordered this book this week. There's a guy around here that actually, it's called The Secrets of Swagger. I'm just going to start, I haven't read it yet, but I'm going to start reading it this weekend.
Okay.
And I was like, that's a good title, first of all. The title's really good. Yeah. And like, I think that matters today.
Sure.
You know, it's having that swagger, and swagger can show up as like really arrogant, or it can show up as just really confident. And, you know, you think about teams that have swagger,
right?
Like Georgia did not have in the first half last week.
It was anything but swagger.
Yeah. I was texting you. I was like, whew, this is rough.
Who is this? Yes.
Yeah. So I think showmanship, I mean, P.T. Barnum, and most of the, you know, influencers that you see today, they're all, they know their showmanship. You see, all your pop stars, like it's not the best singers that become the big pop stars.
Yeah.
It's the people who put on the best show.
Mm-hmm. I agree every time.
Yeah. So yeah, absolutely. Showmanship sells. We got time for one more.
Yeah. Let's do it.
All right. So again, tell me when to stop.
Stop.
All right. Left, right.
I'll stay on the right, man. I'm not a lefty.
All right. Top, middle, or bottom?
Let's go middle this time.
All right. Right in the middle. Just do it.
Just do it.
All right. Action has its own wisdom. You learn in a very deep way by going through the pain of solving daily problems, working on new promotions to bring in more money, setting bigger goals, and biting off more than you can chew. Agree or disagree?
Biting off more than you can chew. Sometimes that can work against you, but I do agree with the going high, because sometimes you want to set your expectations higher. You know, you may not hit it every time, but I would agree for the most part with that.
Yeah, I mean, you're definitely action oriented anyway, so I think that's just.
Yeah.
Part of how you're wired. I'm not. I'm the opposite. I'm more introspective. That's going back to the types. That's my type. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I think that's true. Action has its own wisdom. That's a lesson that I can definitely learn more of. But yeah, you can't learn, you know, when I edit people's copy at the agency and stuff like that. You know, my first pass of editing, it's pretty light and pretty, you know, I don't edit a lot, because you don't really know until you get it out there. I've seen enough cases where a marketing idea or a sales letter several people, you know, professionals didn't think was great, went out and it did pretty good. Mm-hmm. I've seen the opposite. I've seen one where the whole table full of copywriters said, this is going to be amazing. And it bombs. Yeah. Like you just really, once you get past like the foundational principles, you don't really know until you get it out there.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things that go into that. So taking action and getting it out there. And then when it dies, I also think it just clicks open a different part of your brain. When something doesn't work, you're more open to, mm-hmm. you're more, I guess, probably just more humble.
Right.
And you can just see things you couldn't see before. You're like, oh, well, of course this headline didn't work. It sucks. But you couldn't see that until the market said,
sure,
no sales or very little sales.
Yeah. So, I think Dan Kennedy always, I think I learned from him to not be so perfectionistic about things and just get out there and, you know, make it happen regardless. And even if it's, because the tendency is to make sure you're, whether you're launching a product or, you know, you're selling your service and making sure all of your, you know, your I's are dotted, your T's are crossed. And before you jump out there into the public and, or put your little shingle out on your business, you know, having everything just right. And nothing's ever going to be just right in your business. And so I think that's a good takeaway that I always pulled from Dan Kennedy, is just to get out there and make some mistakes along the way and do it. And
yeah. And it's also typically, you know, if you're doing that kind of stuff, it's very expensive, mm-hmm. right? You're, cause you're putting the money out front to get the right website, get the right design, all this stuff, whatever. When you could just be letting your clients pay for that
by
enrolling people into your service, finding out what they really want, and then use the funds that are coming in to grow the business and fine tune the business and get a little bit better quality designer, get a better writer for your content. Like, and you just keep leveling up as you go.
Yeah.
Instead of trying to get it right. Cause you'll never get it right.
No,
completely.
No.
Cause there's just things you can't see.
No. Well, you know? Case in point, again, Dan Kennedy, you look at all of his info products. I mean, the guy has made multiple millions off of, you know, all of his info products that people buy. Yeah. And if you were to look at that 15, 20 years ago, some of the stuff that people were buying back then, you would laugh. I mean, he was all about just getting the information out there.
I mean, I've got some of his binders right back here, you know, the original Magnetic Marketing. It's like, I mean, I think when Dan Gallipoo was on, Doberman Dan was on, it's like 13th version of a copy, you know, back, I mean, if, you know, whatever, Xerox copy.
Right.
Like, you can't even read the whole thing.
Black and white, no color.
It's crooked. It's got the black, you know, corners because it was put on the machine crooked. And it's like he sold that thing for like, you know, $1,000 back in the 90s. You know, I mean,
and if you look on eBay, people are still selling those for a lot of money, you know, that they're selling that information, those information products. that people are buying like crazy. But yeah, I mean, like simple black and white printed, just, you know, you see a three-ring binder with a black and white that just says, gives the title and that's it. And, you know, just slid in the, you know, plastic cover and here you go. Yep.
That, no graphic designer, no, no Canva, no nothing. Just get it out there, throw it out there.
Yep.
You know, probably still got the sticker from like Staples on the binder, you know, it's like wherever they got the stack of binders from.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the have a bias for action is the bottom line there, because you'll learn faster in the long run. You'll learn faster. And the fact is most people aren't going to remember.
Right. well, my friend,
I was going to say like, don't put out crap, but like, that's so subjective. Like you may think it's crap and there may be even some people in your market that think it's crap, but there's other people that's going to be like a breakthrough mind-bending, you know, whatever you put out, because they're where you were 5 or 6 years ago and they're just discovering this world.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, but yeah, you'll probably get some people who are like, oh, this wasn't worth the money. That's fine. You'll always get that.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think of my, my friend, Dan Miller from 48 days. He wrote the book, 48 Days to the Work You Love. He started that book. He's made a fortune off of that brand, 48 Days. And he's all about, you know, career coaching, but he started that out by just doing, you know, he was bankrupt and had lost. I mean, he had been in several businesses, went bankrupt, and he was in several hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt with the IRS. He just started out teaching his little 48 days, even before it was 48 days in Sunday school. You know, he would teach people, you know, the principles of, you know, career, finding your calling. And, mm-hmm. And basically turn, he would have these printout pages. He'd print out a page each week, you know, handout. And then he kind of assembled that into, over time, he assembled that, all of those Sunday school lessons, you know, kind of into a workbook. And, you know, that was his first, before he even got, you know, a mega best-selling author deal, you know, from a publisher. That was just a three-ring binder of all the stuff that he had printed out. So, you know, just to...
I actually think I have that binder, like,
yeah,
right back here somewhere.
So yeah.
I know I have it. I just,
the original with the... I mean, back in the day, when I first got it, it had the cassettes. It had, like, literally cassettes in there. So, it's crazy.
So, bias fraction. So yeah, there's so we did two. So we've got a 1,217 to do on the next episode.
we should be able to cover those.
Yeah. So I do have a guest that hopefully can join us next week. That talks a lot about customer journey experience. So that should be fun.
Great.
We gotta just get the calendars lined up. Mm-hmm. So we'll shoot to have him on. Hopefully the next episode, if not a very, very soon. So
also got, I've been in contact with Pete from, as we, our guest from last week gave us, sent a, basically an email to Pete over at Pete's Wicked Ale, the, guy she was telling us about. So, he's interested. He wants to come on an upcoming show. So we'll get him on. You know, he's got a fabulous story, you know, started two major businesses, one being Pete's Brewing Company, and teaches guerrilla marketing, you know, workshops. So interested to have him on. So he'll be coming on here on a future episode soon.
So I think the pup wants to come say hello.
No. there he is, the pup. Yeah, he's grown, man.
Yeah. We're snorting from the dog. All right.
That's our mascot, all right, well, man.
Yeah. All right. Well, I know you got dinner with the family.
Yep.
So I'm batching this week, so I'll probably go watch some Netflix.
Awesome.
And
a little football tomorrow. Should be a good weekend.
Good all football right. game tomorrow.
Yeah. Hopefully. We'll see. I'm doing a grill out tomorrow, man. You know, the game's at 7:30 tomorrow for all of our listeners. Sean and I are talking Georgia, Auburn, the South's oldest rivalry. Little trivia there for people that don't know. So I'm doing a big grill out, bunch of people coming over. Got some ribs, going to be smoking some ribs for about 4 hours tomorrow before the game starts. So I can't wait.
Sounds good. I may have to go down to Rudy's and grab some barbecue for myself.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
You got to have it.
That was good. Good stuff.
Yep. As always, thanks for listening. You can find us over at persuasionbythepint.com or any of your podcast preferred apps for listening. And as always, if you have a comment, reach out to us. And you can find us over at our Facebook group over at facebook.com/groups/persuasionbythepint. Join us. And Sean, we'll see you next time, man.
See ya.